All right. It is time for another wonderful episode of the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. Not so much musical today, but there is music. And Nima Vidati, my co-host, and I did all the music in here. And this is Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. And today, my co-host, Mr. Nima Vidati, is out because, this is a good thing, he had a kid. He's got a new daughter, Lily June Vidati, who is about 8 days old right now, and he's spending a few Sundays hanging out with her. So today, we have a wonderful guest co-host. It's not just a guest. I'm not just saying, oh, we have a guy we're interviewing today. No, he's the guest co-host, and his name is Bill Bupert. And how you doing there, Bill Bupert?
Hey, I'm doing great, Michael. And again, it's an honor to come on The Fiend Show.
Excellent. Bill does a blog called ZeroGov.com. It's .com, correct, Bill?
It is .com.
Yeah, see, I just autofill everything, so I don't know what the TLD always is, but it's ZeroGov.com. And Bill is a retired army from the retired officer in the U.S. Army. He was a captain, retired in 2003, and he took a bunch of years off to do some soul searching. You know how college students take time off and they go find themselves in Europe? Well, Bill Bupert was a officer in the Army. He was a captain, and then he retired in 2003 and took a few years off and did some soul searching and is now back doing some consulting for the U.S. Army in the Middle East. So he has a better understanding of geopolitical situations, especially with war and the Middle East and the U.S., than the average squirrel that I'm looking at out my window. So, Bill, we're basically going to ask one question today, and Bill's going to talk for 2 hours, and I'm going to ask some follow-up questions. But the one question today is, Bill, why is there unrest in the Middle East? Go.
Michael, the primary reason there's unrest in the Middle East is because of interventionism by the West. And, of course, there's a whole lot of other tangential properties. History doesn't necessarily repeat itself. History rhymes over time.
Uh-huh.
And when you interfere with a closed or a partially closed ecology system of nation states and cultures and bundles of identities within a given area, and you start to bring in these odd alien vectors, it's going to have an effect in unintended consequences that most people can't template into the near and far future. If we look at America's foreign policy since 1893, after the defeat of the Southern states in the Second American Revolution in 1865, what we discover is that since 1893, the American government has been a militarist complex that has made it its primary mission globally not to liberate, not to spread democracy, not to inculcate a sense of freedom and liberty as you and I would appreciate it, but to overpower the world, to make war on the world, and to make the war on the world much like the war it wages on its own citizens, despite the blinders we've had put on our eyes with government education.
That's your thesis at the top, and I agree with all of it. But to a lot of people, that sounds like hippie talk or treason, and it's pretty bizarre coming from a retired Army officer who is in good standing with the military, who still works for the military, to give an explanation that basically says, it kind of sounds like it boils down to the problems in the Middle East are largely the fault of the U.S. and other Western nations. Is that what you're saying, to be clear?
That is precisely what I'm saying. And it isn't simply America. It's also the British. It's also the Europeans. It's also the French colonials. It's also, you know, I read a book recently by Martin Windrow called Our Friends Beneath the Sands, The French Foreign Legion Between 1870 and 1935. And what you find is that when you look at 1885 in French Indochina and fighting against the Vietnamese guerrillas by the French forces themselves, and you fast forward 100 years, there's virtually no difference in what was occurring in the kind of scorched earth and kill all the brown people policy that was instituted by the French, and then they handed the baton off to the Americans, and they ran with it in the 60s.
Were you in Vietnam?
Oh, no, I'm not that ancient, Michael.
How old are you? Can I ask?
I'm 53.
Okay.
And I did visit Vietnam on another mission, but it was after 1975 when American hostilities had come to a slow burn.
Ah, Okay. So there was unrest in the Middle East before the U.S. existed, not probably before long after the British Empire existed. But, you know, I've heard this kind of tongue-in-cheek thing of the reason that there's unrest in the Middle East is Abraham had two sons, which is basically a vast oversimplification at best and just wrong at worst. You know, it's basically saying you could take it back to God-given property rights from 700 years ago, 2,000 years ago, or 5,000 years ago, and people thinking, yes, God gave the Jews, the Christians, or the Muslims these property rights. But is that an oversimplification? Is there any bearing in that? Is there any truth in that?
You know, actually, Michael, I don't think it's an oversimplification. If we apply Occam's razor, which is where the simplest explanation is most likely the truest explanation, in this case, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all have a root document in the Book of Abraham, from whence all the organizational and sectarian splits occurred for people to divine, discover, and create their own sects, S-E-C-T-S, their own individual religionist sects that would go off into their own tangents. And of course, any religion that's practiced in this mortal coil becomes a play on power with the indigenous population that is imposed upon.
Christianity for the first 50 or 100 years was actually a sect of Judaism. Is that correct?
You know, I'm not as familiar with the early church as the later church, but I'll bet that meme follows suit. And one of my problems is I recently got a book about 6 months ago called Laying Down the Sword, where the author is talking about why modern Christians need to come to terms with the inherent violence of the Old Testament. Because when one looks at the Old Testament and you look at the New Testament, not only are they two different testimonials, they're two completely different documents from root to cause to effect. I mean, they couldn't be more polar opposites than they are.
Well, my understanding also of the New Testament is that Jesus says in it that he has a new covenant, which basically undoes most of the violent commands of the Old Testament, and the, you know, you can't eat shellfish, you can't do this, you can't do that. And that seems largely ignored by a lot of people, because there's a there's a Christian identity movement that's very small in America in its root core. I think that economist that we like a lot, what's his name? Gary North. I think his father invented it. And, you know, there's probably 10,000 practicing people in his brand of Calvinism in America, but it's vastly influential on American politics and probably American talk radio without people even knowing who Gary North is or who his father-in-law is or what Calvinism is. You know, there's all this talk of we have to take America back to the Judeo-Christian roots, and that's just parroting something that Gary North's father-in-law said that people don't really understand, but you have people in Congress and running for Congress kind of parroting a very, very watered-down version of it without even understanding what it means. You know, saying go back to the Judeo-Christian roots means we have to kill homosexuals because that's in the Old Testament.
It's interesting, and what you're describing is what's referred to as a Reconstructionist movement, where they'd like to assume some kind of theocratic involvement or influence in government that's far larger and disproportionate than it is today. I'm not certain if Christian identity and Calvinism are the same thing, because the Christian identity movement happens to be very closely aligned with the white supremacist and the Aryan Nations movement in the United States, whereas most Calvinists are not.
Okay, I was using a term that's specific in a generic way, which I shouldn't do. But yeah, Gary North, Christian what is the name of his proposed Christian theocratic political and social order? It's called Christian Reconstructionism.
I think it is Reconstructionism. And as a matter of fact, James Wesley Rawls, who is trying to create an Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, maybe Eastern Washington conclave once America falls apart, which I do think is an inevitability. Once that happens, he's trying to create a remnant up there that would probably parrot some of what Gary North talked about. Gary North is an interesting cat. I'm not a religionist, strictly speaking. I have great respect and interest in how religion works, but I can't profess to feel it from the heart. I look at it much more philosophically. But what Gary North has done that's very interesting is he's done a 20-volume set on the economics of the Bible. Now, I haven't read all of it, But he's also done some very burning critiques of the Constitution. And that set me on a path early in my career, along with Boston Tea Party, a.k.a. Kenneth Royce, with the Hologram of Liberty, showing me where this whole Judeo-Christian construct and the influence of the founding lawyers and how we're a blessed nation and all of that, in the end, not quite so much. Much more propaganda than reality.
That sounds like crazy talk to some people who are probably listening. Can you explain that a little more?
I can. And I don't want to put your audience off, but I'm a constitutional skeptic.
I agree with what you're saying. I'm just saying it needs further explanation.
Sure. I'm a constitutional skeptic. For the longest time, I drank the constitutional Kool-Aid. I authored a book of my essays that we put together, and over time, I saw an evolution of my thought. The name of my book is Zero Gov, Limited Government, Unicorns, and Other Mythological Creatures. I know it's a curious title, but the whole notion that it's trying to be descriptive of is that we have this idea that if we find a parchment that's ideal enough and we idolize that parchment hard enough, that we can maintain limitations on government. But there is no historical precedent whatsoever in Eastern or Western history to show that once a government takes off, it can remain within prescribed limitations in a document. In talking about it or speechifying about it or whatever the case may be, it will get on a train, and that train will take you to expanded and metastasized government that is injurious to liberty and freedom.
Yeah, I mean, a basic like actual how it would affect me question I have about that whole idea. Like, I kind of like that there are people who want to be left alone. I want to be left alone. And there's a lot of them in Idaho and Wyoming. I live in Wyoming, so I want to know if those people succeeded in having their Wyoming and Idaho secession, where everything's based on a Judeo-Christian ideology of Calvinism, extrapolated from Calvinism. What would happen to me? I live here. Would I be forced to abide by it? And we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends, talking with Bill Buppert after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
This is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad, and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is some Squisklar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show on Genesis Communications Network. Today we're talking with Bill Buppert, retired Army officer, current Army, what's the word? Not soldier of fortune, consultant, I think they call it. And his website is zerogov.com. Zerodove.com. Zerodove.com. Yes, it's those mind control drugs the government's slipping into my my vape. Yeah, so zerogov.com. And our question for the whole show is, why is there unrest in the Middle East? Because he spends a lot of time there looking at and dealing with unrest in the Middle East. But we're going off on a tangent here of why did the terrorists win in what has become in America of turning everything into the Stasi, where the government's spying on everybody and there's a militarized police truck on every corner?
You know, terrorism, according to Caleb Carr's definition and the definition that the POTUS approves and the counterterrorism organizations in the United States, simply means politically motivated violence levied against noncombatants and innocents. That's it. It's nothing more sophisticated than that. So what police do on a daily basis is a form of terrorism, technically speaking. I would go so far as to suggest that if one examined how governments behave worldwide, not only the United States, that they must practice terroristic policies in order to make their governments work.
You speak very freely, critically, of U.S. military policy while working for the U.S. military. Do they ever talk to you about that?
Well, indeed they do. And as a matter of fact, I'm on hiatus now. I just completed my last task on the 15th of December, and I plan on taking the next 2 years off. And frankly, what I'd like to do is take the rest of my life off from doing it.
Yeah, and you're kind of a prepper kind of guy, and you're considering moving out of America. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. What my wife and I are going to go on an extended expat exploration in the deep Pacific in Southeast Asia, where I've spent time, and we will return to the USSA once it starts breaking apart.
once things are I was gonna make a joke of like when things are good, but that sounds pretty bad to me, especially if various civil wars happen, because you know, there's a lot of people out there stroking their bayonets saying I'm ready for the civil war, I want it to come. Civil wars are horrible. People get raped in the streets, and people get their heads cut off, and people cut out hearts of people's loved ones and hold them up for cameras.
Look, war is horrific. War is just, it's the most awful enterprise ever. Randolph Bourne said war is the health of the state. And I mentioned 1893 earlier when we annexed Hawaii in a most violent fashion. Then in 1898, what we did in the Philippines and what we did in Cuba would make your hair stand on end. And then, of course, we go into World War I, and we have the American Protective League, which was a proto-Stasi variant that Wilson imposed on the American people in 1916 through 18. I mean, the whole sordid, blood-soaked and nasty history of the American military and the Western military in the 20th century is just it's a horrific affair.
Most people aren't even aware of some of the battles you just mentioned. I mean, if you ask the average American, what wars have we been in? They'll say, probably, you know, if this, they'll say the Revolutionary War, the Civil War. Maybe they'll mention the War of 1812. Probably not. World War I, World War II, Vietnam, and Desert Storm till now. And that's all they know about. I mean, the United States has constantly been murdering innocent people all over the world forever, right?
And you know, most patriotic middle-class Americans are just totally unaware of the history in the 20th century alone, just from 1917 until the beginning of this new millennium that you and I are in. Just that period of time, we see that 265 million corpses were stacked up outside of warfare, and there was probably 115 million corpses stacked up within the wars that were waged. And since 1945, there are a variety of estimates between, I think it's 40 and 55 million that have been murdered by the West in various proxy wars around the planet. Nick Turse came out with an interesting book called Kill Everything That Moves, which is something of a revisionist history of the Vietnam War. And when you look at the civilian death toll visited by the Western military complex in Vietnam, it really gives you pause.
Have you been in battle?
I have, and I'd like to say something about that. The amount of people that you hear bragging about their combat exploits, the more they talk about it, the more they're probably lying and wolfing to you. The guys who have probably seen it are the ones who don't talk about it, and I'm one of those.
Okay. Yeah. So how does this have – what's the bearing on all this? When we get back, we'll talk about the bearing on this little bit of history that we just got on why there is unrest in the Middle East with Bill Buepert on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show.
listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. All right, this is Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural, wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. And our co-host today, filling in for Mr. Nima Vedati, who's out on paternity leave, is Mr. Bill Bupert, a retired Army officer, a captain who runs a great blog called ZeroGov.com. And we're talking during the commercial break about Gary North. We mentioned him in passing. He's the kind of one of the fathers of the American Christian Reconstructionist movement, which is pretty complex and gets watered down a lot to, people in Congress saying, well, we need to do this and we need to kill these people and we need to change these laws because blah, 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 which is just, they don't even understand what they're talking about. And Gary North is a great guy with economics, with old economics. We didn't say that before. We like him. I like him. I read his book, Government by Emergency, from 1985. It's kind of an old square view. It's basically just, you need to stockpile this, you need to stockpile that, you need these hard physical items, and you should invest in these things, but not these things. And he was very prescient in seeing where America was headed. But I think his usefulness may have expired because he recently wrote an article saying that Bitcoin was somewhere between a Ponzi scheme and money laundering. I maintain that it can't be both. And Bill Bupert and I are both fans of Bitcoin. Aren't you there, Bill?
Well, I am. I'm a fan of Bitcoin thanks to my oldest son, who's a very bright young man. And he's turned me on to Bitcoin, and he's far more conversant in just how it works. And you and I were talking earlier. I'm a trained Austrian economist, and what I discover is that you mentioned money laundering, for instance. In this case, money laundering, like corruption, has to take place within the government framework because in a free market framework, it's very hard to do those things.
Yeah, and you said something about, I'm paraphrasing here, but something about like modern war just being money laundering.
When I look at Iraq, which is a bloody mess, and you look at Afghanistan now coming to a close, even though we're going to be there, they say, through 2024, but they're really dwindling the forces to probably a few percentage points of the peak that it was 3 years ago. It's a money laundering operation for the military-industrial complex. When you look at the F-35 and the F-22 and all of these weapons programs and the naval programs and the MRAPs, I mean, right now, as we speak, those very expensive MRAPs aren't only being given to police departments across the fetid plain in the USSA, but they're also being cut apart by welders in Afghanistan so the Afghans can't use them.
But the U.S. is still, at the same time, training Afghan troops, right?
Well, if you can call it that, that's a charitable notion.
So back to why is there unrest in the Middle East? And I think that a way to aim it would be, and why should the average American care? Why should the average American who, votes Republican, is into small government, believes in God, supports the troops, wants to be left alone by the government, but at the same time supports the troops. Why should they care?
historically, Randolph Bourne has said that war is the health of the state. And if indulge me, if you would, to give you a few examples of that from a very early conflict in the 20th century, which was World War I.
Oh, yeah.
I would like everybody in the audience to take a look at something. They can Google this or start page it. Look for something called the American Protective League, which was essentially a government-backed vigilante force that went after anarchists, people opposed to the war, people who wanted peace, people who were anti-interventionist, and they were very severe bullying tactics that would put a smile on any Stasi man's face. Now, here's another interesting thing. In 1917, the national acknowledged debt of the U.S. government was less than $1 billion. By 1918, that same debt was in excess of $8 to $9 billion because of warfare. What you discover when you look at econometric charts during war and after war is that government spending becomes enormous, and it is rarely braked or arrested to pre-war levels, because not only does the government use the spending of the monies, it uses the enhanced powers that it has. For instance, in World War II, in 1943, we got our peak marginal income tax rate of 94% passed by the Red D.R. administration. Now, Red D.R. actually wanted 100%.
Are you saying FDR? You're calling him communist?
I am. Indeed, I am. And even his red diaper doper baby advisors knew that if he imposed a 100% tax on every penny over $100,000, that the American people would probably get a clue as to what was going on in the awful office. And I spell that O-F-F-A-L.
Like stinky?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, so, you know, if you dig all of this apart, what you find is a very solid and disturbing meme. And that meme is this: every time America goes to war, for whatever reason it comes up with, it expands the size of the government domestically exponentially to the point where it can strangle liberty and freedom with much more effectiveness than it did before we engaged in that conflict in the first place.
Now, I think that our average listener, if they hung out with you, and I'm not saying like there's a archetype of average listeners, but based on people who call in, you know, I know that a lot of people believe in God, believe in the troops, wave the flag, love 4th of July, love America. If they hung out with you, they would really like you. You're a gun guy. You raise horses. You're, you know, long service in the military. You don't smoke dope. You don't have long hair. You're kind of square in a good way. I say that respectfully. You're a gun guy. You don't leave home without them. You understand the history of America better than most history teachers by far. But you would probably say that it's a contradiction to wave the flag and say support the troops, and at the same breath or the same person saying, I don't want the government spying on me, and I don't want the government reading my email, and I don't want the government knowing how much money I have in gold in my basement. Would you say that's true?
Oh, it's absolutely true. What an interesting tension, Michael, that you've illuminated, because that's really what it comes down to. When you take away all the patriotic bunting and the flags and the bad anthems and support, you know, if you want to support the troops, bring them home. That's the thing you have to do to support the troops. I think that I would like everybody who supports the troops, go to your local VA and spend a week there volunteering. And volunteer in the amputee units. If you really want to get a wake-up call on what this is doing, that's where you'll find it. And by the way, that is just a small microscopic sample of the kind of mayhem that is visited upon the countries in which other people who don't happen to be Americans are maimed and killed or butchered in some fashion by American and Western arms, of the kind of savagery that you see over there.
Every country in the world, I don't think a lot of Americans are aware of this, every country in the world, every child is taught from school, every school child is taught from age 5 or younger, support the troops, love the flag of our nation, we're number one, everyone else is wrong, right?
You're totally right, and the American government is very savvy with this. Why do you think that there weren't state divisional formations in World War II? Because what the American government learned in World War I was, don't send the 1st Pennsylvania or the 3rd Massachusetts or anything like that, because they do not retain a national identity. They retain a state identity. If they're as bad as a state identity is versus what you and I would envision as the ideal world, It is not a national identity. What they want to do is erase all of these provincial sub-agency lines of states so that they can make the national.
Yeah, I think Mr. Bill Buford has been censored by the United States government. We've lost him. I think the central scrutinizer has pressed a button and made him go away. Are you there? Are you there? Yeah, we're calling him back. So this is Mr. Michael Dean on the Freedom Fiends. Do we have you there, Bill?
You got me right okay, here. I apologize for that. I don't know what happened.
All right. No, the government censored you. Go on.
So what I'm saying is that between World War I and World War II, the government got really smart and they said no more state organizations, divisional formations will go into battle. They are all going to be the 82nd, the 101st, the 49th. They were all going to be numbered divisions. Some will be identified, but maybe they'll be like the AmeriCal division, but they'll ensure that there is a nationalist loyalty and not a state or provincial sub-agency loyalty.
Yeah, and people don't understand that you can't be patriotic and then complain when Obama is trying to oppress you, because Obama is the devil. I mean, if there's a devil, Obama's the devil. There's no doubt in my mind. He fits all the descriptions I've ever heard for the great liar, but he's co-opting this wave the flag USA number one thing that's been built up by conservatives for decades, right?
Michael, may I suggest that this is Bush's fourth term, and that Obama and Bush differ very little in philosophical.
I'd say it's the George Bush the first's like 12th term or 9th term or 15th
okay.
term.
You know what? I'll give you that. Anything post Grover Cleveland, I have to hold my nose.
It's FDR's 90th term. It's Wilson's 110th term. Yeah.
Indeed. But I'm with you as far as I find it so curious, the flag waving, because I don't pay a lot of attention to politics now. I am a non-voter, and I find that I waste finite time and resources by devoting any time to whatever that flavor of the month is. And I don't vote because I don't have a preference for evil.
Yeah.
And I also don't vote because, to me, voting is a form of violence. Because in essence, what I'm saying is, I will legitimize the use of the government to go to my neighbor's house and take his stuff.
Yeah, people say if you don't vote, you can't complain. I say if you do vote, you can't complain.
Thank you, sir.
Can you explain that better? I'm still waking up here. You've been up for a few hours longer than me, and you've had more coffee, I think. So explain what I just said, if you can.
Certainly. It's very easy. Voting is an act of violence, because what in essence you're saying is that I'm going to pull the lever for my man, and my man is going to have the lever of controls to use taxation and regulation vertically and horizontally to control human behavior within the confines of the tax jurisdiction we live in.
That's bold thoughts. I like it. So why is there unrest in the Middle East?
There's unrest in the Middle East for a variety of reasons. I would be a simpleton if I told you I've got the answer. The answer is because of America's Israel policy. Wait, I've got the answer. It's because of what Winston Churchill did, despite T.E. Lawrence protesting otherwise, did between 1918 and 1922 in forming the Iraqi Mandate and everything that we put down on the mappage there that had nothing to do with tribal and ethnic affiliation, but everything to do with nice, tight, linear lines that demarcated these nation states.
Didn't they say they divided the empire up over tea?
Well, they did. As a matter of fact, if you look at Sykes-Picot, that's exactly what they did. So I can say, well, it's Israel's fault. Well, it's America's fault because of intervention. Well, it's a big oil company's fault. Well, it's because of what Winston Churchill did between 1918 and 1922. Well, it's because of 1.6 billion Muslim adherents.
Yeah, that would be simplifying, and we're going to unsimplify after this on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buford. And we're having him back next Sunday, too, so he doesn't have to get it all done today.
Indeed.
Worms. Say worms, Bill.
Worms!
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. Our guest today is retired Army officer and military consultant Bill Bupert from ZeroGov.com. And we're talking about the topic today with a lot of tangential, concentric, parenthetical, hypertextual offshoots that keep coming back to the same topic of why is there unrest in the Middle East. And I think we were talking in the break about why we should say why people should care why there's unrest in the Middle East. And I would say because A, you're sending your sons there. B, they're taking all your tax money to send it there. And C, they're taking all the equipment and techniques of fighting asymmetrical warfare over there and bringing them back here and giving them to your local police and telling your local police to spy on you and make sure you're being a good American and giving them all M16s and tanks with wheels to drive down your street. And, you know, but then and the guys come back from there with training and go work for your local police agency and will kick in your doors. You know, when people wonder, like, why I don't smoke pot, why should I care about if pot's legal? You should care about if pot's legal because the guys kicking in doors for pot are the guys who are going to be kicking in the doors to take your guns. It's training for that. Right, Bill?
This is all conditioning. And, you know, they have a biometrics programs that they use for retinal identification instead of ID cards in Iraq and Afghanistan because they're rather primitive countries and they don't have apparently the maturation to have a driver's license program or anything like that. So they use biometric devices to do that. The use of UAS and drone aircraft and surveillance mechanisms and gun control and weapons prohibition, all of that. If anybody shows us on planet Earth what that looks like, it's the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom ruled the roost for 250 years until 1945, when it was left simply with a bunch of remote rocks around planet Earth and the United Kingdom itself
To the point where they'd go to war over the Falklands, which is like a bunch of rocks with some sheep on them, basically.
Indeed, and some of the most troubling things is that you look at the UK, they've got 25% of all the world's surveillance cameras, according to a survey 3 years ago, on planet Earth. 25% of all the surveillance cameras. They've got microphones on lampposts. They've got they just have a very sophisticated surveillance state. And I'm struck by a program I watched several years ago where they said that outside the Soviet Union during World War II, which I like to refer to as the war to save Joseph Stalin, outside the USSR, the United Kingdom was the most tightly controlled society on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the book 1984 basically takes place in England, because the author saw in 1948 where things were headed. And that all trickles down to America.
It does. Yeah. And we're going to see more and more of that. You're going to see the real ID thing get revised. And with the National Socialist Healthcare that this current administration is trying to put into place on the tail of the prescription Medicare D expansion that Bush 2 gave us, what that's going to involve is a necessity for an identification database that is as intimate as it gets with all of our behavioral patterns as human beings. There is nothing that can be left off the government's reservation as far as what they can inquire about in your behavior on a daily basis if this goes through the way they plan it.
I also think that you can't – we said in the last segment that it's a contradiction to say support the troops, wave the flag, and also complain about surveillance and intervention from the government. I think it's also a contradiction to be adamantly anti-immigrant and want to put up a wall and have surveillance on all those people and wonder why you're getting surveillance on yourself. Would you say there's a connection there?
There's an absolute connection. I happen to live in the state of Arizona, and people here had a SB 1070 that was passed, which said that if the cops assumed that you were illegal, they could ask you for identification. Well, everybody was all – the usual conservative suspects, conservative and neoconservative, were all over that with the kind of nativist sentiment that you just described. But take it to the next level and the next step, which is this. If they think you're an illegal and they can require your paper identification – then what stops them from requiring de facto and de jure that everybody carried at all times?
Yeah, and it's a lot of people assume that would just apply to Mexicans. But, you know, I look like your average IRA member, Irish Republic Army, you know? I'm a white guy with a very Irish face. They could say I look like one and pull me over. Look at my gun.
I'm a student of the IRA. We could talk about that.
That's That makes people want to tune in, including the government, for the second hour with Bill Buford on the Freedom Fiends. So stick around. Well, Bill Buford's going to talk about the IRA, and he said he was a student of it. I want to know what that means. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buford.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. I'm Michael Dean, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. And today, filling in for Mr. Nima Vidati, who's out being a new daddy, we have Bill Buport from ZeroGov.com. And Bill made a very provocative statement at the end of the last hour that I'm going to ask him to clarify. It kind of picked my ears, and I'm sure it picked the ears of several DHS fusion centers listening in, and I don't want to get droned. So what'd you mean, Bill, when you said you are a student of the Irish Republic Army, the IRA?
Well, first thing I have to say is greetings to all Stukoi who are monitoring the conversation from a government office. Maybe you can learn something. What that means is that I have been a practitioner and I guess one could say a consultant and a professional in regular warfare, asymmetrical warfare, fourth generation warfare for a large part of my career. And what one wants to do is you can learn from the bloodless practicum of history by studying what's worked and what hasn't worked in the past with insurgencies and counterinsurgencies. And what's really interesting about the Irish Republican Army from its early days in 1905 all the way to the present day and all the splinter groups like the Real IRA, the Provos, and all the permutations in between, is that it's one of the only English language rebellions that's gone on in contemporary history, in which there is a very broad and deep reading and in both primary and secondary source documentation to see what made it tick, what made it work, what made it succeed, what made it fail.
Gotcha. And what did make it do all those things?
Well, as a matter of fact, what I'd like to do is just take a snapshot of history to show the importance of media, influence warfare, influence operations, and those kind of things, and why it's so important to those of us in your audience, myself, you, and all the rest who are involved in trying to recapture liberty and freedom, how that actually works.
Yeah. So a lot of people think the answer is to polish your bayonets and say, we got to get back to the Constitution. Why is that not the answer, those two things?
Well, number one, as I mentioned earlier about combat and combat operations, it's a bloody, horrific, and abysmal affair that doesn't make anybody richer for the experience. And there's a whole lot of history that is written that is rather aspirational, inspirational, and nationalist in nature, that really hides what it's all about and the ugly truth about combat. And so if you're sharpening your bayonets and you've got your ammunition stockpiles and you're bragging about what you're going to do when the cops come or the soldiers come or the government comes and all that, to me, that's a lot of wolfing. And there are other means that one can exercise what Sun Tzu would call the indirect approach, or exercising the fact that maybe if you do your planning properly, you don't have to go to war at all to seize what you need.
And why is it not a valid answer to say we need to get back to the Constitution?
Well, I think that's another program for you and I, Michael, if I may be so bold, where we would discuss why the Constitution is inferior to the Articles of Confederation.
The short answer, your short answer in the break was, we're back there. We're getting a big dose of the Constitution right now.
Oh, that we're getting it good and hard. This is the Constitution that we live under today. And here, ask yourself this question linguistically. To prove the point that I'm making, what descriptive value does the term unconstitutional have? That's a rhetorical question.
Especially since what is constitutional and what is not is up to like eight dudes in dresses who have vested interests. Eight dudes
robed government employees who will since 1935 had done nothing with the exception of U.S. v. Lopez to rubber stamp the expansion and maintenance of power of the state versus the individual.
Cool. All right, back to the IRA and your study of them.
So what I did is I did a number of papers, and one of the papers I did examined Bloody Sunday, which occurred in 1920, and Michael Collins, people may have seen that movie, and there was a lot of artistic license taken with Liam Neeson's role. Even though Liam Neeson did a terrific job, I thought, he didn't quite capture everything that Michael Collins did. On the 21st of November, 1920, he launched his what he referred to as the squad against the castle, where there was a paramilitary intelligence organization of English nationals that had been sent to Southern Ireland at the time to infiltrate the IRA and to infiltrate Sinn Féin and to take them out. Well, what he did on Bloody Sunday was he had a sophisticated complex attack in which he took them all out at once. Now, he was exercising violence, but the blacks and tans and the very people that he gunned down on that morning had done plenty to provoke the rage of the Irish people at the time. Well, it just so happens that afternoon, the Croke Park massacre occurred at the hands of the local constabulary, who were British maintained, in which there were probably twice as many innocent spectators murdered as there were members of the Castle Intelligence Unit that Michael Collins had gunned down that morning. What made this so critical was that there was something called the Jallian Walla Ba Massacre in 1919, and it massacred 1,500 Indian nationals, to include members of the Indian National Congress, which Gandhi was in charge of, by the British at the time in the Raj. At first, it became a cause celebre, where the British celebrated what he had done. Once they examined it, though, the Amritsar speech was enunciated and articulated by Winston Churchill, and I think that it was probably one of Winston Churchill's best speeches ever, even better than the ones that he did during the war to save Joseph Stalin. Now, in this speech, what he said was that what was done was monstrous, what was done was a black eye for the British people, and that so many innocent men, women, and children, especially women and children, were maimed and killed, that it was a huge black eye for the British Empire. So look at the timeline here. He gives that speech in July. Michael Collins does this in November. The Croke Park massacre takes place. The British people are exhausted with this kind of injurious intervention against the brown folks in Ireland, I mean in India, and the more Celtic folks that they despise so much after an 800-year occupation in Ireland. And I think that there was a unique crux here in time where that exhaustion, matched by Churchill's brilliant speech and the kind of animus that caused towards the empire at the time in a larger stroke of the British population versus what happened in Ireland, may have pushed them over the edge so that 800-year occupation by the British of Southern Ireland, which will become Eyre over time, E-I-R-E, which would become Eyre. If he hadn't done that speech and that massacre hadn't taken place, they probably still wouldn't have gotten their Irish Free State as a result of that. So I use that as an illustration that the IRA, they are bloodthirsty, and they did things that no one would brag about. But as an insurgency, they were quite bloody effective.
Is it intentional or accidental that Peter King, the Republican gun-grabbing New York congressman who is on the Congressional Department of Homeland Security board, that he once donated money to the IRA?
You know, there's a romantic notion with the IRA, and I would tell you that when you study the IRA, you find that there's a pre-World War II bifurcation of socialist IRA members, and then you find a post-World War II bifurcation of communist IRA members who were very closely aligned with the USSR, with Libya, with East Germans for armaments and training and such. And a lot of people will say, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But when you get in bed with fleas, you are going to come out with fleas, even if you have a flea collar.
So the question at the beginning of the show is, why is there unrest in the Middle East? And this sounds like a vast divergence from that. And I think it's not, because there are possibly similar asymmetrical warfare things in people defending their property and their right to have a chunk of land that they've had forever and someone came in from the outside and took it. Let's get back to the Middle East. Why is there unrest in the Middle East?
Well, let me make the connection real quick, because Michael, you're right. The connection between these is that the use of mine warfare and IEDs and the decision to take to target non-combatants, which is terrorism, was taken up by both the IRA and was taken up by a lot of the folks from Palestinians to Iraqis to Kurds to Afghan to Pashtun, whatever the case may be. They've taken up these asymmetrical advantages against large standing armies because that's the advantage they have.
Yeah. And people that don't understand what's going on in the Middle East at all and just say, oh, Muslims want to kill America because of our freedom. That couldn't be further from the truth. And I'm not saying there aren't bad people over there. There's a lot of bad people over there and here and everywhere. But I kind of look at it more like it's their version of Red Dawn.
You're right, Michael. I've got to set this straight. Robert Pape wrote two brilliant books called Cutting the Fuse and Dying to Win. In those books, he examined the suicide bomber phenomenon. And here's what he found out, and it's very counterintuitive to what you hear in the lamestream media, which is that 95% plus of all bombings, whether it's in Palestine, whether it's in Iraq, whether it's in Afghanistan, or anywhere where there's a Muslim insurgency going on, it is done by indigenous folks who are fighting an occupier. That is the meme that matches all of them. And we hear this thing about, well, they're using their weapon of last resort and such. When the Israelis got their butts kicked in 2006 by Hezbollah in Lebanon, that really woke a lot of people up in the West. And I think it was a harbinger of things to come that we've seen in Iraq and Afghanistan with sophistication of the insurgencies there. Because in Afghanistan, it's not only the Taliban, it's Haqqani, and it's hundreds of resistance organizations. It's the same across the world. Right now, India, the subcontinent of India, is fighting 300 separate insurgency elements within the borders of their country, to include sophisticated Naxalite rebellion, to handfuls of folks who don't like being lorded over.
Yeah, people don't like being lorded over by foreign invaders. And it gets you in trouble when you say it, but when you say support the troops, you know, military should be strong and everywhere, you're basically saying go invade people, right?
That's exactly what you're saying. If you read some of the hair-raising letters home from 1898 to 1902 during the Philippine campaign that we had general officer memorandums that went out that said, any males over the age of 10 on this island are fair game for you to shoot on sight because they could be weapons-bearing.
And that's that happens now with U.S., right?
It absolutely happens now. You were talking about drones earlier. You know, drone warfare and the institutionalization of torture are probably the twin pillars of infamy that we've had in this new millennium of warfare in America. When you couple those two things together with the repatriation, the rendition, the institutionalization of torture through whatever means is necessary, whether using black sites offshore of America or the kind of thing that we see in the penitentiaries in America that happen on a daily basis, and you match that up with the drone warfare where you have kill lists and you have collateral damage. You have men and women being killed and, you know, maimed and killed.
It creates more terrorists. Like, people who would never take up arms will now because their innocent family members were murdered. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buprich when we come back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This is Mr. Michael Dean on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza Hour. And our guest today is retired Army officer Bill Buprich from ZeroGov.com. So, Bill, tell us more of why there's unrest in the Middle East.
Well, we talked earlier about those different vectors, because one would be very naive to think that you could say that there's one reason why they're so disturbed by Western intervention in the area. What we have is 1.6 billion religious adherents to Islam and the 90 subsects thereof, most of whom are members of either Sunni or Shia. And you have this very complex web of relationships, like the one between Syria and Iran, one of the longest lasting state-to-state relationships in the Middle East. You have the Wahhabists in Saudi Arabia who do everything they possibly can to undermine Western influence in the region while smiling and shaking the hand of Westerners at the same time. There are just a number of vectors, but I think that what they're suffering from is almost an imperial exhaustion of being occupied for so long. Because since the end of the 16th century, there has not been any Islamic occupation of a Western nation at all. The number is zero. Since the 16th century, there's been a Western occupation of Islamic countries numbering in the dozens, if not the hundreds, over that period of time.
And who was doing that in the 1600s? The UK?
They were, but what we have to remember is that the UK, the imperial vision and manifestation around the planet with the UK really took off in the early 18th century, and then it ended in 1945. But there were certainly manifestations of it naval-wide in the 16th century, but it didn't really start to take off as far as a kind of ground consolidation of the empire until the 18th century.
Okay. So before that, I mean, there was obviously unrest before that in the Middle East. There's unrest everywhere in the world, but it was small bands of people with swords, right? It wasn't imperial armies coming in and doing modern warfare for its period.
Well, indeed it is, but we can look at a large number of formations of very formidable soldiers through time. We can look at Alexander. We can look at the Roman legions. We can look at the Mongols. The Mongols were at the gates of Vienna as late as the, I think it was either the 15th or 16th century. And at the Battle of Tours, I think in the 8th century, on the Iberian Peninsula of what is now Spain, if things had turned in that battle in the opposite direction, London would have very well be a Muslim capital in the world instead of a Christian capital if the tides had turned in the other direction. But that's just the way history works. Like I mentioned earlier, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself because there's so many different permutations, but it certainly does rhyme. And what we also discover, and I talk about this in my book, Zero Gov, Limited Government, Unicorns, and Other Mythological Creatures, is that secession and the breaking apart of nation states is the rule, not the exception in history. That is the ebb and flow of how nation states emerge, get power, and dissolve over time. And like you mentioned, Michael, the same thing has happened among the Islamic nations, you know, whether it's during the Caliphate era, or what we see with the Wahhabist strain in the 19th century in Saudi Arabia, and all these other different sects. They certainly have, within the confines of their own Islamic world, conflicts and strife that they're visiting upon each other, absent Western intervention. But I think it really metastasized with Western intervention.
Do you think that the U.S. military has any legitimate reason or benefit to have any troops on the ground or anything over there?
Absolutely zero. There is no legitimacy in what's happened in Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, it's funny because for Iraq, I mean, 21 causes belli that the Bushevics gave us to go into Iraq, and none of them have turned out to be true. And then we look at Afghanistan, where we invade in 2001 in concert with the Northern Alliance. We kick the Taliban out of the capital, and they go back to the regions that they're stronger in, which they are still strong in as we speak. And they manage to put up a remnant government or shadow government of sorts and maintain their power at a lower level. But in the end, picture this. You have a small group, Al-Qaeda, who happens to be either the uninvited or the invited guests of the Taliban government, and they happen to be in Afghanistan, even though much of their strength happens to be funded by the ISI and the Pakistanis. But we don't invade the Pakistanis because the Pakistanis are a nuclear nation. So we invade Afghanistan. You know, it's much like Al-Qaeda parks itself in Mexico, and they're uninvited, and then all of a sudden we invade Mexico because they allowed an uninvited guest to launch attacks against Texas from Mexico. It just makes no sense.
Didn't the U.S. have something to do with the formation of Al-Qaeda? I mean, it's an oversimplification, but Congressman Charlie Wilson arming the Muj, didn't those guys' kids all become Al-Qaeda, and weren't they the community leaders organizing Al-Qaeda?
It's a bit of an oversimplification, but when it comes to Osama bin Laden, like Saddam Hussein, he was a federal employee for the longest time.
We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buppert about why there is unrest in the Middle East when we come back from this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
This is Mr. Michael Dean on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza Hour. And our guest today is Mr. Bill Bupert, retired Army officer and expert on asymmetrical warfare, who's worked a lot for the U.S. military since retiring, and really knows what's going on over there. And his website is zerogov.com. And my question, this segment is an extension of my question last segment for Mr. Bupert. Should America be sending our sons and daughters over to the Middle East, and why or why not?
An unapologetic, absolutely not. We have no business whatsoever either sending our sons and daughters over there, or even doing proxy conflicts by providing them and provisioning them with the weapons, the training, and everything else that they need. You know, when you look at what we've done since the end of World War II in the Middle East, it hasn't made things better. In 1948, when Israel was founded, And between that time and the present day, we all hear about the vaunted Israeli military, the vaunted Israeli Defense Force, and their capabilities are just beyond measure, and the Mossad is so savvy and all of this stuff. Well, if that's the case, why are they still battling the Palestinians? Well, the answer
and
is
why,
deceptively
And why so. Do they need America's backing if they're so savvy, I would say, too.
And that's another program in and of itself, but would you spend $65 million a year at APEC to get a $6 to $12 billion return on your investment?
I don't know. I've never been invited to have that problem.
But I think that's a pretty good return on investment for political activity by the Israeli lobby in the American capital to get money for themselves. So I mean, that's one reason why they do that. But it's deceptively simple why Israel will never prevail over the Palestinians, and that's because one of the measures of effective asymmetrical warfare in the Islamic world is their willingness to weaponize self-immolation, their willingness to use suicide as a means to an end. With the exception of the Japanese kamikaze tool sets that were used in World War II, rarely in the West has that been practiced. But in the Islamic world, it is a measure of combat effectiveness to be able to employ suicide vests, suicide bombings, complex attacks that would involve the use of those along with small arms fire and indirect fire. And it's very, very effective because all they have to do is the same thing that Maggie Thatcher complained about to the IRA. She said, you know, I have to be on my game all the time, and all you guys have to do is penetrate that game once and prevail.
Yeah, and I think that I want to take a little aside here to make an explanation. It's not an apology. It's an explanation because I know that we do have listeners monitoring us from organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center looking for us to say something they can take out of context and use against us. We are not we are going to say some things adamantly complaining about the Israeli state here. We are not anti-Semitic. I personally love the Jewish people. My daughter was Jewish. My late daughter, her mother was Jewish. We have no problem with the citizens of Israel. We have problems with all states and their militarization around the world, and particularly Israel, but only because it has so much influence on the American army. And basically, I've seen a meme going around that's like, join the U.S. military and fight for Israel. And that's kind of accurate.
Well, it's very accurate because what you'll find is that it's a very powerful meme in the Islamic world to use that kind of anti-Jewish sentiment to their advantage. And by the way, anti-Semitic means that you're opposed to both Jews and Arabs because both of those are Semites by the definitional standards. But what occurs here is that they will use this mythos that you just talked about with the Southern Poverty Law Center. They'll use that and leverage that to their influence warfare advantage and say that, no, these aren't simply Christian crusaders. These are Jewish crusaders who are working for the Israeli government. And they get a lot of traction in the Sunni and Shia populations when they make those kind of statements, whether they're accurate or not. But perception is reality.
Yep. So tell us more of why the U.S. should not be over there.
Well, number one, we have this notion where we're over there so that we can be energy independent. Well, by the way, less than 20% of all our oil imports come from the Middle East. In Japan, it's 70% plus.
Wyoming,
but
man.
But for the United States.
Wyoming. Wyoming has a lot of oil, a lot of coal, a lot of wind, and a lot of uranium.
Indeed.
It could power the United States pretty much.
It's much like so many things. If the government would simply get out of the way and allow the market to operate in a fashion, it will deliver. But, of course, that's not government's process and that's not government's charter, because government's charter is to make sure that they expand and control people to the extent that they can and to expand that power and control over people ad infinitum, no matter what the toll on effectiveness and efficiency of delivery of resources.
Yeah. So what would you do if you were somebody waved a magic wand and made you commander-in-chief of the U.S. military tomorrow? What would be your first 10 actions?
In 24 hours, what I would do, because I would abdicate in 24 hours, the first thing that I would do is that
you would dissolve the position and then abdicate in 24 hours.
Thank you for that clarification, Michael. That's exactly what I do. You caught me on the spot extemporaneously, so I can't give you a top 10, but I will describe some of the things that I would do. I would reduce it to one active division from 12 in the U.S. Army. I would cut the entire DoD complex from its present expenditures of nearly $1 trillion a year to 10% or less of that, if not trying to zero it out entirely. And I would take out all functionalities that allow it to be as aggressive and imperialistic as it is today. Because one great thing about militias, and I'm not talking about the militias that make the Soviet Poverty Law Center fill their pants. I'm talking about the militias in the historical sense in the United States. Militias cannot be used for imperial mischief because they get bored rather quickly, and it's very hard to take them en masse and deliver them to another nation state. Because one thing I've discovered in all of my reading and learning and practicing and all of that is that the only just war is the war that you fight on your own soil, and there is no other, and there are no exceptions to that. Every exception that is made to that is simply a rationalization of the projection of power overseas so that that government can increase its power domestically over the people that it lords over.
Yeah, and I think that whenever there's any talk of vastly reducing the U.S. military, a lot of listeners who've been conditioned by the flag waving and the hymns to the state, they look at talk like that, like, who is this beatnik hippie? I have to stress, Bill Buford is not a beatnik hippie. He's an adult man who carries a gun, who works with horses and works with his hands and has been in combat with the U.S. military and rose to the rank of officer. You are not a beatnik hippie peace dude, are you?
Well, I'm not, but I have a lot of sympathy for beatniks and for crunchy anarchist hippies. And my wife's a nutritionist. She's a homeschool mom. She's the horsewoman. I was merely the exchequer who took care of her horse fancies. But for the most part, she's the one who's given me the inspiration for doing exactly what I do and why I do it. For instance, there's a lot to be said for anarcho-hippies. When I was at Pork Fest and the wife came along with me, very crunchy, very aware of food, very aware of what's going into their bodies, very aware of diet and nutrition and exercise and things like that. So I can't entirely dismiss the milieu of beatniks and hippies. The thing that disgusts me about hippies is their childlike reverence for the power of the state to make the world better.
Which is bizarre, because in the 60s, there was a whole group of people. I don't like them. The ones that were blowing things up, they were practicing asymmetrical warfare, but they were not, they did not love the state, that branch of hippies. And somehow it got co-opted by, I don't know, Madison Avenue and politicians and the military industrial complex. I mean, I think one big thing was they took away the draft and you lost 9/10 of the war protesters. Like the ones, a lot of them were just protesting the fact that they could go to war and weren't just against war. If they weren't going, they didn't care. And I do think, I really like that there's a lot of crossover now in what I would call in a vast way, the liberty movement between, the gun guys and like the the crunchy nutritionist, store your food, have your own heirloom seeds kind of thing. And I think where that came from, do you remember that book, The Whole Earth Catalog?
Stuart Brand.
Yeah.
I love that.
That guy was a military vet. He was a hippie who carried a rifle in the trunk of his car because he believed in self-defense, and he wanted to go back to the land, but he knew you couldn't go back to the land without being able to defend yourself against bears and interlopers. And that's where I think that was the beginning of this kind of crossover that we're seeing now that we're both liking a lot.
Well, he was also an anti-Luddite. I mean, he embraced technology.
Computers, man. He was involved in The Well, which was one of the first internet service providers way before the World Wide Web.
And the Whole Earth Review and the Coevolution Quarterly, and now he's at the helm of something called the Long Now Foundation, which is really interesting, where they're trying to preserve knowledge for the future by finding new media that can't be erased so that we don't lose anything in case a man-made catastrophe that's visited upon us, or an asteroid hits, whatever the case may be, that knowledge would still be saved.
That's my inspiration. You know, I read that book when my crunchy hippie sister had it in the attic when she went off to college. And in the early 70s, when I was a little kid, I found that book and read it and just devoured it. And it influenced me a lot. I met Buckminster Fuller when I was 12. That was kind of a really life-changing experience. And I've always been interested in the kind of long... He talked about the long now without using that phrase, that kind of idea in the Whole Earth catalogs. And that's one of the reasons that the Freedom Fiends do things like, I wrote an article recently called How to Make Your Radio Show Popular 100 Years in the Future. And we do things like we put all of our episodes up on BitTorrent as well as an MP3 stream through iTunes. And it's a lot more work to do that. And we have a great guy named Sean Duvalli who helps us with that. We have a torrent master. I'm our webmaster. He's our torrent master. And the reason we do that is because we realize that we could get droned figuratively or literally at any time for free speech. And we want to have 30 or 40 or 50 people out there who are in different countries, in different geographic regions, who are set up to just share it forever. And that's how I think you keep it around. I mean, when you think about our great heroes of libertarianism, you know, Rothbard and Mises and people like that, and the people that came before them, and anybody who criticizes us because we're criticizing Israel and thinks we're anti-Jewish, they have to remember that most of our heroes, our intellectual heroes of libertarianism, were Jewish people from Europe. Some of those people, like, their works were lost, and actually the way that one of them got preserved was some Stasi guy in Soviet Russia was put in charge of keeping these, like, banned, you know, destroying these banned items that were found by these libertarians, these writings, and he actually read them and said, this Austrian stuff makes sense, and he preserved it, and it got published later because of the one copy of the manuscript that he had.
That's amazing, and I wonder at the number of people who have been caught up in our drug war, for instance, in penitentiaries, how many Rothbards, how many Rands, how many Machiavellis, I mean, how many great artists have been caged and imprisoned by the U.S. government and will never see the fruits of their minds?
Yep, and we'll be back with more. And remember, Machiavelli wasn't the bad guy. He was the guy writing about the bad guy. So when people say Machiavellian, yeah, it doesn't mean bad thing. It shouldn't. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Inoculation from indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
This is Michael W. Dean on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Show. Irking statists and the Soviet Poverty Law Center and your local DHS Fusion Center since 2011. And we got one little segment left here with Bill Buepert, who you can find at zerogov.com. That's zerogov, zerogov.com. He's a retired Army officer. And we're going to have him back next Sunday because we like him so much. He's going to be here next Sunday. And this Wednesday, we have a special Christmas show that's pre-recorded with the guy from FEE, Max Borders, from the Foundation for Economic Equity. No, what is it? FEE.
Education.
Anyway, education. Yeah, they've been around since the 30s. They're an OG libertarian organization. And then with this coming Saturday, we have Nima Vadadi back. And then Sunday, we have Bill Buepert again. So Bill Buepert has about 3 minutes to wrap up part one of his history of the world and why there's unrest in the Middle East. Go, Bill, go.
So what's the solution to our problem in the Middle East? There is a distinction between isolationism and non-interventionism. Isolationism is much like the Mexican substitution economy, where they say that we have all of these resources and such, but we are not going to cross-germinate with the rest of the world. We'll sell our oil, but we're going to make everything in-house. That's isolationism, and that leads to a kind of hermetically sealed stasis in innovation where innovation simply doesn't happen. Non-interventionism is much like the Swiss model, where you say, we are not going to export violence, but we're going to have Congress with the world in peaceful, voluntary market enterprise, and everybody benefits from doing that. By making war on the world and making war on the Middle East specifically, it does nothing to make us safer. It does nothing to make us more prosperous. And it does nothing to make us more free here in our own country because, like the United Kingdom was illustrated earlier, the more we practice this kind of military superiority and supremacism overseas, the more of that is going to happen here at home. All one has to do is look at the 19,000 police agencies and the 1 million status-badged, costumed thugs who populate all these police agencies and all the military equipment they've got, their blouse boots, their buzz-cut haircuts, their military training, and their almost occupation-style mindset. What it tells you is that if you're making war in the Middle East in the fashion that we're doing now, be prepared for every bit of that to come home. We have spent trillions of dollars in 12 years in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I guarantee you that when the last Allied boot leaves Afghanistan between 2014 and 2018, within 2 weeks, Kabul will be under siege, and within 2 weeks after that, Kabul will fall. And for what? And to what end? I think the end that we see here, and I'm not a conspiracist, I believe in government incompetence more so than conspiracy. I think what we see here is a money laundering operation for the military-industrial complex, which is why the usual suspects in Moscow on the Potomac were salivating at the prospects of opening up a wider conflict in both Yemen and Syria, because Iraq and Afghanistan are winding down. As long as we continue to attempt to make war on 1.6 billion Muslim adherents, there will be no peace in the world.
That's very cogent, and thank you for enumerating and explaining that so well. This has been Mr. Michael Dean on the Freedom Fiends talk show, talking to Bill Buepert, who you can find at zerogov.com. That's zerogov.com.
But I'm a fan of antiwar.com, and I have a book on Amazon called Zero Gov.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, was antiwar.com, which is the guy who was on last week. Scott Horton used to work for them and now has gone off on his own on the Scott Horton show. Yep, and we'll have you back next Sunday.
It's an honor, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
It's been an honor, too. What are you doing with Christmas here? What are you doing this week?
All six of my children are home for the holidays because I have grown children, too, and they have gone away to the winds, but every one of those darling creatures are going to be in my house.
Is that the first year you've had them all back for a while?
It's been a while. since we've had them all here at once. So yeah, that's the best part of the holidays.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a wonderful time there at Casa de Bupert, and I hope you have a wonderful time.
We
with
call
your
it
kids.
The Circle A Ranch.
There you go. The Circle A Ranch.
That's right.
So that's pretty awesome. Yep. And this has been Michael Dean on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Show Extravaganza, talking to Bill Bupert from ZeroGov.com. That's ZeroGov.com. I'm going to say it one more time. It's ZeroGov.com. And thank you for listening to the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Show. Worms.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's F-R-E-E-D-O-M-F-E-E-N-S.com.